Chudu jazo je jomba jomden dende je jeba tanjo Dobe zanje reba dan jazo temba devara jeba jide Kebo deve kalo jurwa lana meba lada menam je tumba zanje Shaja Tubala Chazelo Chalo Yavzo Jeho Tumba Chumden Dende Shin Shabata Yanda Banzobe Sanje Rigbata Shabso Tumba Tewara Shiba Jigde Kibun Dube Kalu Jurwa Lana Meba Lada Menam Je Tumba Sanje Shaja Dubala Shazelo Chudo Jamsu Cheho Gumbo Jizun Jambe Yala Shazelo Kange Lodze Chivne Chin Ninda Namda Ramse Ve Chini Tungwe Chishin Se Chini Je Tuga Legum Kanda sibe zara mare mentomo dunge geze Chozo gula puji tarze yenla chuju yande Chukdara chito nyomu nilong lege Mare meze donye nyogo chini junze raje na Tene taje saju taze yende lunzo gyaze tuve Chuta chuta chuni kende talu meze jambe yanglade Omo arabadzanade Omo arabadzanade Omo Nadi Omo Arabaza Nadi di 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 Kada tenju shunglu toba ye Lodze bobe nawa tse do su Chuzi medo tama rira linje nende genba Sanje shinglang midin bewa ye Chogun namda shin chiba cho Kenam ye chugu kala kenze tenden Chendara zambe dujan zema Samje chunji chaba abdo se Mendala ganaya daya me Tsoje chonama la chanjo bado tane jansu Tage chushi jibe sonam manje Drola penje sanje endro barasho Tazoje chona la chanjo bado tane jamzo che Tage chushi jibe sonam manje Drola penje sanje endro barasho Sanje chuda tsonje chona la chanjo bado tane Tage chuse jibe sona manje Drola penje san dobara sho Lada lame medam yaji ombodan Gyajin la zo cho je cho la jeva jeva nama sanje sumba rangdo shi shen tewe kyu cho ba deda shi je tambe chunyin shin en de shi shi. Namo ala ye je dan lu dan nu shin je dhubon da dam ye je nam dan dhuwa gun je tanam chi zamba tam je ke do ta ge chu tun do. Good morning. Today I thought we will do something different. We will begin with a short meditation, the one that we normally do, and then we will begin our sharing, and then we'll start the session. So most of you are familiar with the meditation. Anybody who hasn't attended the meditation? Okay, in that case, I won't be giving any instructions. Is that okay? Yeah, so you know, yeah? So first, of course, just adopt a posture that is most comfortable to you. You can either sit in full lotus position, or half lotus, or whatever position that makes you most comfortable. So the main point is that you need to be comfortable. And then, of course, your spine should be straight. And normally you say that try not to raise your head so high. Then it contributes toward distraction. Excitement. So normally said, hold your head slightly bent forward, and your shoulders should be level, and neither stress, neither slouching, nor a kind of tense. And the hand, you can either place your hand in the meditation gesture. You all know I don't need to go into detail, or you can just place your hand on your thigh. And then your eyes, you can relax your eyes. You can either choose to gently close, or you can slightly open or gaze in front of you at an angle where if you were to look, you would see the tip of your nose. So it's up to you, whichever is comfortable for you. Some people like it to close, some people like to leave it open. It's up to you. And then in order for us not to drool and all that, so they say you have to let the tip of your tongue rest on your upper palate. So that helps when you are doing a long session. So whichever is more comfortable. And then normally, we try to begin the session with taking 3 deep breaths. So this is more like the first one, just breathe deeply. It's a deliberate breathing. It's not the natural rhythm. It's just you have to breathe in deep, and then even when you exhale, release the your breath in a measured, slow pace. So the first time you do that, second time when you breathe in, you can imagine that your body is filled with revitalizing oxygen, and then when you release, you can also imagine that if there are any stress or any part of your body, if you feel any stress on any part of your body, you imagine that that's kind of relieved, and your body relax. And then at the third deep breathing. Then try to draw in all your attention into the present moment. So at the moment, we may be thinking somewhere else, but just try to bring your attention into your body. That's where we are now beginning the actual session. So once you are at that stage, and then you need to bring your attention or awareness to the present moment by focusing on your breath. So first, right now when you are taking those deep breaths, it's a deliberate breath. Now try to come back to your natural pace of breathing. Then once you are at that level or at that state, and try to find a focal point. So that is normally since we are doing a breathing meditation, so that would be your breath. So try to rest your mind on your breath. So the main point is not to be distracted. So normally when we try to focus on an object, our mind usually wanders. So when this happens, you just, instead of judging yourself and going after all that, just bring it back, simply bring it back, and then continue focusing on that. So that's the essence of our meditation. So let's begin with the three deep breath and then continue. You can slowly open your eyes, and if you feel a bit stressed, just take 3 deep breaths. How long do you think we have meditated?
10 minutes.
Anybody wants to guess? 5 minutes? Did anybody feel, what's it called, eternity? Yeah, I think we meditated for 10 minutes. Yeah, sometimes we feel, it's like we have meditated for hours. Why isn't he, ringing the bell? So how did you feel? Was it easy? Was it easy to do? I forgot to mention, but I assume that you all know about this. So normally when we do this meditation, so we need to find a focal point. So that is, for some people, it could be the tips of the nostrils, where you feel the sensation when you breathe in and out. For some people, it's the belly, the sensation from its rising and falling. So whichever is more prominent, whichever you feel strongest. So you need to choose that. And then while you are doing the meditation, and if you have difficulty holding your attention onto your breath, so one of the techniques is to count, mentally count. So you breathe in, breathe out, and mentally say one. So each round of an inhalation, exhalation, you count as one. One, then two, and go up to 10. And then repeat. Then along the way, let's say if you have counted up to 3 and then your mind wandered, you have to start from the beginning. So that's one way to help you remain focused on your object. Another way is you can just place your hand on your belly. So when you place your hand on your belly, and then when you breathe in and out, you can feel it's rising. So that helps to rest your mind on it. That's when your mind keep wandering. And then sometimes we feel a bit, boredom or sleepiness or drowsiness. So when this happens, sometimes it helps to check your posture. Sometimes we may be, sitting low instead of, maintaining your spine straight. So you need to check your posture. It helps. And sometimes letting just a bit of light, if you are doing with your eyes closed, if you open a little bit, the light comes in, then that helps to kind of wake you up. So these are techniques that we can use during meditation. So as mentioned earlier, that meditation is like going to the gym. So if you are consistent, if you do on a daily basis, then your concentration, the ability to concentrate, the ability to remain focused on the object improves. You will notice. Sometimes when you are a beginner and if you start doing, you will notice that, how come? You will feel that you are more distracted rather than being able to remain concentrated on the object. So that is actually a good sign, because now you are becoming more aware of your mind wandering. So even though you feel like your concentration is weakening, it is not. You are becoming more aware of your mind. So you notice that you are able to catch when your mind wanders. So if you continue on with this, and then there will come a time where 5, 6, 10 minutes is just so easy. You just close your eyes, you just focus, and then you are able to remain there. Of course, the goal is to achieve shamatha. We call it shine. So when you achieve that, of course, you have the ability to remain focused on any object for hours, for days, for weeks. There is no discomfort, no physical discomfort, no physical mental discomfort. So you will be able to stay or remain in that concentration, that state of concentration for hours and days. So that would be wonderful. So with that kind of concentration, then if you utilize that kind of concentration in understanding or insight into emptiness, that's very powerful. At the moment, why we have difficulty producing any result is that our mind always wanders. Just now, even for 1 minute, when you try to focus, it just goes up. It's like, that's why we call monkey-like. It jumps from one tree to another. And another example, that Lama Yishi, who has popularized this idea, is popcorn. How you make popcorn. So you put the corn in there and how it pops. That's our mind. If you try to focus, something comes up. So that's why this we say, I have repeatedly mentioned this. If you need to remember something, just sit down and try to do meditation. All that you have forgotten will come into your consciousness. So let's do our ritual. Please, how have you applied your understanding during the past 6 days? Please share, people benefit. Anybody? The day's progress, you should have more and more, you know, things to say, because you have so many options now. Oh, in this situation, I can apply this. Oh, this one, I can apply this. The first session, you can say, oh yeah, I don't have that many. But here, it's the opposite, isn't it? The first time, there's a lot more, and then as we go on, and then fewer and fewer. I'm sure it doesn't mean that you don't apply. Anybody? But no pressure, yeah. If anybody wants to, if not, we will go on. Yes.
It occurred to me to think about this in as many situations as possible, whether they were virtuous or non-virtuous or neutral. Something positive or virtuous was happening. To think about, what am I learning here? What can I learn from this? How can I apply this instead of always looking just? Of course, you're going to worry about, the main thing is to avoid the non-virtuous actions. But I think that, for example, for me, a good example is over the years, as I have been becoming more patient, and less frustrated or less angry, it's been very helpful actually to see other people behaving patiently or impatiently, angry, because I can look at them and say, if they're being angry, I can say, oh, that's how I used to look. Not very good looking, is it? Or somebody being really patient in a very trying situation is a good role model. So it kind of goes from making you think of it in all situations.
Yeah. So I think one of the points that we can use in our meditation towards cultivating tolerance against or towards, is it towards our enemy, is that towards our enemy is that, when we see how our enemy behaves, and you say, oh, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to behave like that. That's how they teach you. In a way, they teach you how to behave in a positive way. If you were in their shoes, you would look so bad. As I shared my own story, at that moment, when the monk laughed, upon hearing my retort. I was so embarrassed. At that moment, I realized how shallow, how small I was. So yeah, so that's one way when we have this kind of strong grudge or hatred or animosity towards, or against this time, animosity against, isn't it? Against your enemy, yeah. So if you, yeah, this is one good example. Ooh. Mm. What was I saying now?
Concentration.
Ah, you see, no concentration. So easily distracted.
Well,
response against your enemy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I've been kind of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I work as a psychologist, so I follow the mind and been reading more about karma and how it multiplies. And I was telling you privately last week that I was looking at Mengele, the Nazi doctor who, the angel of death, and how he had his last, how he lived his last life and the last part of his life and how he was. And it's like these things multiply, and it looked like, well, he just drowned, he died peacefully. But it doesn't appear that that's what it was, because, he was just a nasty person, and it grew.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, what's just happened
mm-hmm.
in our country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people take to these horrific actions.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it comes from somewhere. It didn't just start,
mm-hmm.
And so it grows and grows and grows and grows, and it has quite a horrific end, and there will, in their next, life, it's that doesn't look good.
Mm-hmm.
So, people say, oh, you have to punish them, and it's like, they will be punished.
Mm-hmm.
It's their own mind, because their mind becomes just poisonous. And the opposite is when, for instance, that when we learn patience and tolerance, and when we learn to, doesn't matter if somebody says something, you have to own what you say back. And even if it's small, you have to, make some kind of amends and that sort of thing. You become that kind of more and more and more. You feel good.
Mm.
You do, and you feel peaceful, and these acts multiply, because then it becomes like second nature. And it takes a while, It's like maybe it starts by, okay, I want to say something, but I don't. And then eventually, that it just works. So that's how, in my understanding, how, the wisdom of the Shigata, explaining all that, to me, it really makes psychological sense. So that's what I've been, doing this week.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. So that's I think, how we are supposed to apply our understanding of karma. Whenever we feel that we are treated unfairly, but we feel helpless, so instead of harboring grudge and hatred against the person, if we are able to separate, or if we are able to think from the karma point of view, well, that person, his tendency to engage in this comes from a karma that he has created. So that is actually, as a result of karma, all these delusions at work. So if you are able to see that as a working of his afflictive emotions rather than the person himself, so you will be able to reduce that animosity. And also, since you know you feel helpless, there's nothing you can do. So that's the code is for. Let karma take care of it. So these are some things that you know you can apply in our daily life. So these are the things that you need to take home. Come here and you know take from here. Otherwise Dharma becomes unrelated to your life. Here we talk and discuss all about karma, this thing, and then when we go back, when we leave this room, as if there's no relation at all. So then, yeah, it's really a waste of time. Yeah, so thank you for sharing that. Yes.
Since our homework was to probe our mind for whatever action you do, so when you probe your mind, you always look indifferent or making judgment to other people around you all the time. And then I try to apply the refuge with the Sangha Dharma and how Buddha became enlightened because of training the mind. And the taking refuge to Dharma means you should not is not to harm or should not be violent to us. So then when this ill feeling or the judgmental mind, I just started saying, okay, that means I'm not taking refuge to the Dharma being indifferent to the people.
Yes, yes.
So that helped me to stop, not right away, but after 10 minutes or after a while.
Yeah, it's good enough. Just to realize that is good enough. That's the first step. Yeah, so remember we quoted this. Shin and Yendu may ye deng mebra, tey in chick jo kunjo sum do ne. Teacher Chamber Shim to Tembadan, tey loves a yamba mebra cha. Tey a canna lende like some best. So when the real refuge, taking refuge, is following the teachings, the instructions given by Buddha, that is to abide by karma. That's the essence. Anyone? Yes.
So this week I had what I felt like was a major fail. A pretty negative situation, medical situation, and I was reminded how important it is to calm my mind in order to apply any of the antidotes, and that sometimes it can take days how I've been instructed to calm my mind, then out of the blue then came the 8 verses, especially the one that you had given us last. But no matter how hard I tried, up until that point I could not. In my mind, or I felt, it's not working.
So
it just kind of reinforced how, if it doesn't come to mind, and you can't apply the antidote, that maybe you just need to call first.
Be patient. Yes, yes. Of course, the first common sense, let's say if you are having a discussion with an irritable person, so it's really irritating if you are not able, of course, it is not easy to apply on the spot all this compassion and all that. So the commonsensical thing is to just walk away. And then, you kind of cool down, calm down, and then come back and continue. So, it's not easy. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We would be sitting up together next to Buddha. So, it takes time. But it is very good. You shouldn't feel discouraged. But you see, there are so many people who are ignorant of this. Many people don't even realize this, that, I need to calm down. What I'm doing is not right, you see. But in that sense, we are very fortunate. At least we have this understanding, this recognition that, what I have done is not right. That destroys my own peace of mind. So in future, I should be more careful. I should put more effort. So all these small steps lead to the bigger success. Mm. So it is good. You should feel kind of rejoice that, you know, oh, I was able to realize that. Mm, that's good. Anyone? If not, okay. Yes, go ahead.
I was listening to a teacher, I don't know if it came from a text or just, you know, from his own mind, but he just said this one simple sentence that stuck with me. He said, with every action, we are writing the script for our future lives.
Yes, yes.
And it's so succinct because even though I know that, it's like I tend to think of like major actions that I do as creating.
Yes, yes.
Every single action, and then it reminded me that Lama Zopa Rinpoche, especially more lately, I heard him, he's teaching much more often on taking neutral actions or, you know, and making them positive, like with everything you do, turning on a light switch, thinking you're bringing all beings to enlightenment, or walking upstairs, thinking that you're bringing all beings from the lower realms with you, or you're going downstairs, that you're going down to the lower realms to help things. So I was just thinking about that this weekend, just trying to think about every action.
Yeah, so that's good. Sometimes, you know, some words kind of trigger something in us. Yeah, so it's good. We all know that, you know, we are all, every action creates our script for the future, but we don't have this conviction. That's why we are so careless. That's why I give the example of landmine. Yeah, if we are so convinced, we know that, we know that if you step on any of these minefield, is it? Landmine.
Yeah.
You know that you will be blown into pieces. So that's why you will be very, very careful. So if we have this kind of understanding at that conviction level, that, you know, whatever we do, we are writing our own script, we would want to have a script that is favorable for us. But we don't have this conviction, so we just ignore and just go about it. So every now and then, so that's why these four characteristics of karma, you have to contemplate on it again and again and again until you get conviction. So the whole point of Lamrim is all of this to gain conviction so that you will take a particular kind of action or path. That's where you will arrive at the final destination, that is Buddhahood. Otherwise, there's a lot of distraction. When we don't have the conviction, then we get kind of, you know, distracted here, there. Yeah. It's like a drunkard. It will be, you know, rolling here. Yeah, you never get to the destination. Yeah, so today we are going to talk about mending relationships through Nikon. We have a saying in Tibetan, it's more of a maxim, I think. So this is a metaphor or analogy to show that our samsaric existence is full of suffering. Our samsaric existence is likened to sitting on needles. So if you are sitting on a needle, of course, there is no pleasure, isn't it? It will continuously poke at you. So that's our situation. There are many causes why we experience unpleasant situations. So one of the underlying mechanism or underlying cause is disappointment. If we take out the disappointment from that equation, I think our life will be different. I think there will be less, or maybe not even there isn't, there won't even be unhappiness. So at the root of all our unhappiness, there is a disappointment, the role of disappointment. So it is wise for us to really identify what are the sources, we may not be able to find each and every sources of disappointment, but we should try to identify what are the sources of disappointment. So for example, you are unhappy with your partner, with your son, with your daughter, with your husband, with your wife. But when you really closely analyze it, underneath there is a disappointment. And then of course if you do go deeper, there is a cause for disappointment. And then yeah, go down. But first there is a disappointment. And it is wise to, you know, first at least identify what are the sources of disappointment. So one very common source of disappointment is, of course we have discussed this before, about lack of, it is due to lack of contentment. We are so focused on what we don't have rather than what we have. We have no appreciation for what we have, not just in material terms, in terms of people around you, in terms of conditions and situations. So because of that, that is one real source of our disappointment. So psychologists has discovered or found that nowadays in teenager, amongst the teenager, the depression, the number of the rate of depression has tripled. Let's say in 30 years ago, it was so low among teenagers. Now it's like tripled number. So there could be many causes. One of the causes, they said that it is this sense of entitlement. These young people have this strong sense of entitlement. I should have this, I deserve this and that. And when they don't get it, they're disappointed. And that leads to depression. So psychologists call this fantasy gap.
It's called what?
Fantasy gap. Fantasy. So they fantasize having this and this and this. Of course, through commercial ads, they promote all kinds of latest, I don't know, in terms of fashion, in terms of gadget, all this. So they think that I need to have this, I need to have this. But they don't realize that what it takes to acquire this. So there is this gap. So they fantasize having this, but they don't want to work for it. Because of this gap, there is disappointment. So Nikon is, actually, yeah, it's a bit, okay, let's just go through this. So one is, of course, lack of contentment. And another is loss of opportunity to be grateful. This is a very common thing with us. When the person is alive, we don't appreciate. We don't even visit the person. And then when the person dies, then there's a lot of regret. And then you cry and wail and whatnot. So that is also one source of disappointment. You realize that, you know, when the person is around, you didn't do that. Only when the person is gone, we realize that, oh, that person is so important. Then there is something called the gap between one's idol and reality. So this is very relevant to our relationship with other person. So we always have our own ideal of a person. Let's say for parents, they have this idealized or this concept of idle children. Or if as a children, you know, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, you shouldn't be doing that. You idealize this children, how children to be. And the same way, the children have this as a parent, you should do this, you shouldn't be doing this, you should do this for me, all this. And then when the reality hits, you idealize your, let's say, your partner, your husband, your wife, your children, to be that way. But rarely that is the case. And then there is this disappointment. And then problem begins. Then we also have this, instead of engaging in self-examination, we have this tendency to judge other people, to criticize other people. And then our this tendency to provide unsolicited advice. This is all coming from your own perspective. Or you shouldn't do this, you should do this. And there's no way you can make the other person conform to your ideal. When that does not happen, you get disappointed. You think that, you know, you are trying to help in. We normally say, oh, you know, I was really trying to help in, and, you know, this person never listened to me. I was so disappointed, you know, I tried to help him. But did you help him after, you know, understanding from this person's point of view? No, we always give advice from our point of view. So that's why in counseling and all that, we are not allowed to give any advice. Because the advice that I am giving may be suitable for me. Maybe it had worked for me. But it may not work for the other person. People have different inclination. People have different mental disposition. So what I find it effective may not be effective for the other person. So that's why I think in counseling and all that, you are not allowed to give advice, but you try to discuss and what would you do? And then, you know, there will be work. And then only then, yeah. It's the same with the coaching. Does it appear here?
Yeah.
Oh. Today is a bit in a strange way. And then, finally, negativity bias. We have this tendency to focus on the bad side, on the negative side. Let's say a student, the person scores A for 9 subjects and scores only B for 1 subject. And normally what the person would do? Oh, I did so terribly bad. I got only B. Even though, you know, the rest of the subject is A. That's our tendency. In psychology, it's called negativity bias. So likewise, in our life, we tend to forget, we tend to become oblivious to somebody's kindness. But when that person did something short of your expectation, then yeah, we see that. And then we just hold on to that. It's, oh, this person, you know, he didn't do this. But what happened to all those good things that person did to us? We are blind to that. That's our tendency. That's also one of the causes of disappointment. And that's the main cause of our, what do you call, the relationship that what is that word now? Entrench? You call it?
Entrenchment?
Yeah, entrenchment. What does that mean? No.
Yeah, hunkered
down.
No, no, no. I mean that when you have this the relationship problem. Yeah. Okay, you got my point. Yeah, so you have difficulty, you know, the in the relationship
chronic,
in
chronic
chronic of course can be. Yeah. Yeah. So that's when you have difficulty dealing with people, your interaction affects. And we have watched a longitudinal study, remember, on the TET. The relationship is the strongest predictor of well-being. So they observed people's life for 60 years. So it is very rare in psychology, in research, study, to have that kind of longitudinal study. But yeah, they were successful. And their finding was that those who are having good relationship, they tend to be happier. They tend to score high in well-being. So this suggests that really maintaining relationship, good relationship, is so, so crucial. That we can tell from our own experience. Let's say if you have a difficult relationship, if you and your husband or you and your wife doesn't get along in the family, imagine the environment. They will, first of all, there will be all the time argument, quarrel. And then even your children, they wouldn't want to go back to the home. The environment is so, what is that, corrosive, so poisonous, so toxic. Whereas if families get along so well, it's so happy, you would want to go back to your home. So that we don't need research findings to tell us that. We know from our own experience. And of course, there are so many research to show that if there is a relationship problem in the house, how it has a detrimental effect on your children. They grow up with all kinds of problems. So relationship, it is very, very important. So there are one way is to appreciate others' kindness, to recognize how kind the other person has been. Normally we don't think about it. Especially when you are in Tibetan culture, when you are family members, we hardly kind of notice that. We don't even have this practice of saying thank you to family members. So we kind of take this for granted. Like children, they will not say thank you to their parents. That's because children have idealized that, as a parents, it's their duty. They should do this. They should provide us with food. They should provide us with this and that. So it's like taken for granted. And then when children do any, Tibetan parents won't say thank you. Because to the parents, it's like, yeah, you are children. My children, you have to do this. So most of the time we take things for granted. But if you are able to really appreciate how fortunate you are, appreciate the good fortunes that you have, it makes a huge difference. And to share with you my own experience, some of you may have already heard this. I got the opportunity to study psychology, to do the bachelor's degree. I didn't go there hoping to get there. For us, as a monk, I spend my life in monastery. I don't have the conventional certificate. So I never expected to get an admission in a university. But you see, here is nobody in USA thinks that. It is their entitlement. It's taken for granted. But for us, it's something special. Because in order to get into a university, you need to produce those class 12 certificates or whatever you call here. We don't have, even though we studied in monastery for years and years, that degree is not recognized. So when I got this opportunity, of course, all my classmates to get into psychology, you have to be quite smart. You need to achieve certain CGB. My classmates are all smart kids or smart young people. And I am fresh from monastery. I am not that exposed with all that young people's thing. And my English is, not that, is more like a rudimentary English. To do psychology, you need to read those journals. And I remember, until I read a few times, it doesn't make any sense. It is like writing on a bumpy road. All this, they like to use those jargons. So when you think conventionally, there's no way that I would have completed this degree. But I did. And when I think back, it is not because I'm so smart. It's just because of my sheer persistence, perseverance. And that has a factor in the appreciation. Because I felt that this is such a golden opportunity. I have three reasons. The first reason, in monastery those days, only a handful of monks can speak English. And I am fortunate to be amongst that handful of people who can speak English. And secondly, even if you have some English to get into a university, you need to produce all that. But through the CEO and all that, through friends, all this, I managed to get into the university. Of course, I had to produce a lot of documents. And final thing was, I think, Robert Clark. He helped me with a letter through Kanga Rinpoche. Yeah. I have produced all kinds of documents. The university is okay, but the immigration is not okay. They want something else. So when the Stanford letter, the letter with the Stanford, that logo, that sealed it. No more question, that's it. And then even if I get into admission, but nowadays, tuition fees, not cheap. And where would I get? I have no income. But I was very lucky. I was given full scholarship. So when you combine all these three, I feel that, wow, I was so lucky. And it would be a waste, really, to not to put effort. That's why I managed to finish the degree. And this is all because of having this appreciation. When you realize how fortunate you are to have this opportunity, somehow it propels you. It compels you to put effort. So I'm not self-praising, just sharing that, how important it is. So like in your relationship, when you are able to recognize the kindness of other person, you will be more appreciative of that person. If you are more appreciative of that person, your behavior, the way you interact with the person, would be completely different. And then this is reciprocal. So if you interact with that person in a positive way, definitely it is likely that the person will also respond likewise. So you see, that's how you improve your relationship. So there are many methods to recollect or to contemplate on the kindness of others. But there is one which I find it very effective. That is a Japanese practice called Nikan. Have you heard about Nikan? Okay, I think we should stop here. It's already 11. And then we begin. Yeah. We continue. Oh, okay. I wonder. Okay. Is this yours? No, yeah? Okay. So Nikan, which literally means inner looking, introspection, introspective practice. So inner looking is a Japanese practice which has the root in one of the Buddhist sect. It's called, Jodo Shinshu. Yeah. So the Jodo Shinshu is the belief system that's ascribed to Amitabha Buddha, and they recite Amitabha's names to be born in Pure Land. But they have this practice which is more like a esoteric. Esoteric. So only certain people are allowed to do that. But it is a very arduous practice called Mishirabe. So this practice involves or entails fasting as well as deprivation of sleep. So you do meditation, mainly it's a self-examination, but you do on top of fasting, you do contemplation. So it is a very arduous and very challenging. So very few people become successful in finishing or completing this. So this one who... So later... So this has root in Jodo Shinshu sect. And Isshin Yoshimoto is the one who secularized this practice. So he attempted several times. Only I think after the fourth or fifth attempt, he was able to complete. The first several attempts he failed. And then realizing that how beneficial this practice is, he wanted it to benefit more people. Whether you subscribe to the belief system of Jodo Shinshu sect or not, he felt that it would be very beneficial if anybody can practice this. But then because of this arduous practice, not many people can practice this. So he secularized this and he removed all those practices like fasting and sleep deprivation. So you can sleep, you can eat, but you can continue with the contemplation. So Isshin Yoshimoto, he lived until 1988. And then he first introduced this Nikan at Nara Prison, Japan. And it was so successful.
How can you do that if he's dead?
Or is it 1995? Or is 1955 or something? Sorry, there was a mistake. very sharp eye. Oh, good. I didn't notice that. Yeah, it's not. Yeah. Hmm.
Reincarnated.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, so I think it must be 1955 or something. Yeah. So he first introduced that at Nara prison, which was a huge success. And then many of the prisons adopted this practice. And of course, later it became like a Japanese psychotherapy. Many of the hospitals, those therapy centers, they all incorporated this practice. And at the moment in Japan, there are so many centers. So people just go for Nikan practice. So if you have any psychological issues, even your physical issues, people go there to do this retreat. It's a week-long retreat, and then you come out, you are completely a different person. So the goal of Nikan practice is to make a cognitive shift from one's focus on blaming others to that of appreciation and gratitude for what others have done for oneself. So this session begins from, let's say, I think 5:30, and it continues on to 9:30. So there's no real actual session and post-session. So in between 2 hours of session, what is called mensutsu, they call it in Japanese. I'm not sure whether I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it is like the guide. So the guide would come and then ask, have you contemplated on this and this? What have you contemplated? So normally in these sessions, what you do is you reflect on your life in a chronological order. So you first reflect from your your birth, from the time you are born to first 6 months. So you have to choose a person. So normally the practice is you choose your mother as the first person to reflect. The idea is that if you are able to generate this, if you are able to engender appreciation and gratitude towards your mother, then you can extend that to other people. So that's the idea. So you start with your mother and then you relate and recollect your experience during that year from birth to 6 years. What you just go through when I was, of course, first year, hardly, you know, people will be able to remember. But then as long as you have to go as far as possible to remember your experience with your mother. And then you reflect on there are 3 set of questions which we will cover later. And through this, so you go through chronological order, 6 months, and then each after that 3 year, each time. So 6 to 9, 9 to 12, you go on reflecting on these 3. Just very simple. What is unique about this practice? It is so simple, yet very profound. You don't need to have any understanding of Buddhism or any understanding of this thing. It's just reflecting on these 3 questions. So through that, what will happen is then you are able to shift your make this cognitive shift. Normally, as we mentioned, yeah, when things happen to us, all the time, we look for external things to blame. Either it is fault of external, inanimate object, or it's somebody else's fault. It was never your fault. That's our tendency. But if you go through this practice, then you realize it is not really the case. You will completely have a different, understanding of the other person. Because of that other perception, your view of the other people change, and then you are able to understand yourself more deeply. And that's how all these changes occur. I was trying to remember something. Never mind. So what are the three questions? So it's very easy. There are three questions. So there's a self-examination utilizing three specific questions. The first question is, Hey, did you see those noya? You cannot see anything. Sorry, I think what happened was,
Yeah.
Let me just do this. Let's just keep this background, okay? It's too dark. So the first question, what have I received from this person? So let's say if you are going to start with your mother, so you recollect the time period between your birth and 3 years or 6 years, and see. So the first question is, what have I received from this person? What that person did for me? So you have to be very honest with yourself and try to recollect. And it could be as tiny as, you know, my mother made me my favorite dish. That's also a kind act. My mother did my laundry. My mother, when you are small, when you are a baby, of course, you are fully dependent on your mother or your, what you call, the primary caregiver. So, yeah, because you are helpless. Everything has to rely on that person. So when we think honestly, and there will be lots of things that, you know, you can come up with. My mother did this, my mother. So this is not just mother. So you can use this with your father, with your spouse, with your husband, with your wife, with your children, with your sibling. You can choose a significant. But the tradition is that you start with your mother. But later we are going to do this exercise, but you can choose any person, a significant person, somebody who is significant in your life. You can choose that. So especially if you are having some strain, yeah, that's the word, strain relationship. If you have difficulty relationship, if you have strain relationship, if you are able to do this practice, yeah, from the anecdotal stories, yeah, you can see that it is so powerful. Because, as I mentioned, we have this tendency only to look at the things that are not to your expectation, fell short of your expectation. We don't really think of those other things that a person, you know, did for us. So when you do this meditation, then you will realize that, oh, you did this, so many things the person did. And that automatically engenders this appreciation. With this appreciation, your view changes. And then, of course, it is followed by a positive action response. So this is the first question. And then the second question is, what have I returned to this person? What have I given back? So now, especially when you are at that age, from 0 to 6 years, there is very little thing that you have returned, that you have given back. So most of the time when you really do this, you will realize that what have you received in that first, there's a lot of things. And then what have I given back to this person? Wow, you really need to scratch your head, you know. then you see that, oh, I didn't do much. That's also very important. With that, you realized, oh, why am I expecting so much from this person when I did so little? So this is how it works. And then the most important is this one. Ooh. What troubles and difficulties have I caused to that person? We hardly investigate this. We hardly examine this. This is really examining from the other person's perspective. Let's say an act as simple as making your favorite dish. But if you really get into this person's perspective, get into the shoe of this person, what did this person had to do, go through, just to make that? Let's say in morning breakfast, if the person prepared your favorite breakfast, first of all, the person has to wake up early. Normally, let's say if you just grab something and goes to work, and if this time if the person prepared your favorite breakfast, that other person have to wake up early, and person have other things to do, but you have to sacrifice all the other things, and then do that. We normally don't think that. So this is very important. Most of the time, what happened is, this is in one of the famous books of Nikon. It's a Western practitioner, Greg Krech or some. Yeah, I think his name is Greg Krech. So I like this, his explanation. He says that this is very important to reflect, recollect and examine this, because when we were young, we have this understanding of, let's say we're a teenager, the experience we have with our parents or with our siblings or whoever that person, that experience is the experience understood from a teenager's view. We carry that into our adulthood and we hold on to it. Now, if you are already adult, if you look back, it is like third person looking at the interaction. Then you will see more clearly, I was wrong. I was unreasonable. So many things. Maybe until now, you blame that person for something. But when you look as a third person, it becomes clearer and you realize that, actually that is not really that person's fault. I had a role in this. And that kind of reduces the animosity towards that person. And other important thing is you will gain so much insight. I did this retreat because my thesis was on this.
Oh.
Yeah, because I was bringing in this Nikon as a method to cultivate compassion. Because in compassion, so we have these two methods. One is the exchanging yourself with others. What is that called?
Equalizing
and exchanging yourself with others. And then other one is the six causes and one result, effect, cause. Yeah. So both, they are coming from different direction, but they all converge at generating this yiwong, this sense of endearment. With this sense of endearment, then you cultivate compassion. So my view is, if that is the converging point, why not use something simple to engender this? When you have this through this method, when you recollect the kindness of others, then definitely you are able to generate yiwong towards, first, of course, towards your inner circle. And then you can extend that to other people. And then eventually to all sentient beings. So if you are able to do that, it is so easy. Just 1 week, and it is so powerful. So that's why my thesis was to suggest a new method of cultivating compassion. So I call it Nikon-based compassion training. So for that, I needed to experience that Nikon. Otherwise, you know, it is just saying from the books. I just read and there's no experience. So when I was thinking of, I was a bit, bit concerned, because I have read so much about this Nikon, and I have this strong belief that it is so powerful, so transformative power is so great. But then, yeah, I was like, will I experience that? You see, if I don't feel that, if I fail to have that kind of experience, then when I tell this to others, it won't be that convincing. Because deep down, I know that, oh, this is so-so. So I was a bit concerned, and I don't know, what is that word? Yeah.
Apprehensive.
Apprehensive, yeah, apprehensive. But anyway, yeah, I was very fortunate to do that in Atlanta. So there was this doctor, Chikako D. Ozawa Silva, her full name. So she was a Japanese, and she is a professor at Emory University. And her husband is my lecturer, my supervisor. So this Dr. Chicago, she has done this several times, and she has even written a book on this. So she also had the opportunity to be what is called a Mensisu, that's the guide. So she very kindly...
What's the name of the book?
Later I will show you. Yeah. So she very kindly agreed to, you know, help me with this. And so I did it. And I started with my mother. So I tried to reflect. I tried to recollect my interaction, you know, how kind my mother. So my biological mother passed away when I was, I think, 4 or 5 months old. So my mother's sister took over. Of course, I'm always grateful, and, you know, there's always love and affection. But when I did this reflection, especially the third one, what troubles and difficulties have I caused to that person? For the first time, I realized that I have caused her so much trouble. When my mother passed away, she was just passed, I was just passed on to her. And suddenly, I became her responsibility. I realized for the first time that she might have her own dreams and plans. But at that moment, all that dream and plan shattered just for me. So I didn't see that before. But when I put myself in her shoes, what would have gone through? What would have happened? Then I realized that that was a huge sacrifice from her part. So as soon as I came out of the retreat, I called my mother. I thanked her. I said that for the first time, I realized. Yeah, I called her that, you know. I realized for the first time the sacrifices she made for me. Yeah, so it is very powerful. It's very powerful. Mm. So I will let Dr. Chicago explain some of the transformational benefits. speaker is on. Can you see whether it's the...
I thought my mother is this kind of person, but by following in like the four, kind of their four steps, the clients seem to often follow during the like a self-transformation. The first change is actually not anything about the change notion about the client themselves, but actually the first change takes place in client's understanding of other people. I thought my mother is this kind of person, but by following the Nikon three themes, clients will remember, oh, my mother wasn't quite the person that I thought. So once actually your understanding or judgment of other people change, inevitably that challenges your own understanding of who you are. So that is the second stage, the changed perception of oneself. And once that happens, actually, there's a third step, which is the changed perception of one's illness or suffering. And lastly, there is a changed perception of one's surroundings and a change in the way the client reports to his or sensory experience. So I don't have much time to dwell into the sensory experience, but this kind of a first 72 hours, incredible physical discomfort, followed by almost no existence of the knee pain. That is quite remarkable. Like,
that did not happen to me.
Most often report, first 3 days is so tough. Time goes very slowly. Your body is in pain, discomfort, but that disappears over time. So here, let me show you four case studies from Japan, Austria, and USA. So please feel free to guess which case study comes from which country. So case one. As I dredged up specific memories of what I received from my mother in early childhood, the chocolate cake she made for my birthday, the gentle way she taught me to swim, I am filled with the palpable sense of appreciation. I feel more permeable, less armored. The idea of myself as solitary no longer plays. I can see my experience as an accumulation of layers, like colorful sedimentary rock, deposited through the acts of others, the act of nature. Which country? Germany, Israel? Right. This came from the US, American client. So, number two, I always blame my mother for being the source of my anxiety neurosis. After my Nikon, I realized that I always received an infinite amount of love from her. It wasn't because of her, but rather because I only paid attention to the things she didn't do and grew in anger and dissatisfaction. That, as a result, I built up stress by myself and then became sick. Thanks to Nikon, I gained security, and since I am certain of the affection I receive now, I think I can finally live in the present. Due to the time, I will give the answer, Japan. Case study three, the feeling of thankfulness for life and love, above all for family members that filled me up is indescribable and wonderfully beautiful. Seeing in the long term, my life has changed step by step since that week. It was the beginning of a process of resolving various problems, not always at the same tempo, but one that still continues without pause, a new beginning. So that came from a client in Austria. Case study four. Up until now, I was convinced that I was living, but now I realize that I am lived, thanks to other people. Because of this, I've been able to rest with a happy and calm feeling. This morning when I woke up, I didn't feel that I woke up, but rather, oh, I still have life. I felt very happy. My body felt light. After I realized how much affection I received from my father, who is still alive, and realized that I was loved by him, and that I was very happy. I was able to feel calm, and so I was able to do Nikan in a calm and quiet mind. So anybody who knows anything about the language might be able to guess. This comes from Japan, actually. Yes. Well, I am lived this, like, ikasaretiru. It's sort of commonly used. But still, actually, as you might have noticed, maybe there are some differences you are perhaps picking up. But at the same time, what you see is the increased sense of appreciation for what they have received, sense of gain, security, and connectedness. So after Nikan, so many Nikan clients become very creative, and they write poems, and do drawings, and painting. So Mr. Yanagita, one of the Nikan practitioners, is now showing this relational self that was drawn by one of his clients. The image in this is not clear, but the second image of the mandala that was also made by another Nikan client is quite powerful. The Buddha-like figure in the center is a Nikan client himself. The first layer, if you understand Japanese, is grandmother, grandfather, mother, father, sister, so the family members who are very close to him, and friends, and outer circle is actually strangers. It is quite amazing. It kind of showed the essence of Nikan in this one mandala, in which it took entire book for me to kind of describe what Nikan is about. So, Nisi, the four, kind of there are four.
Okay. So, yeah, another one, another client. I slowly and very imperfectly began shifting away, because this is the person who had a difficult relationship with her mother. She could not even stand 1 minute with her mother. But this is what happened after she did Nikan. I slowly and very imperfectly began shifting away from my habitual focus on myself, my needs, my desires, my perception, my ideas. My image of the ideal mother had blinded me to the mothering I had in fact received. Her support was there all along, but it didn't really register as long as I was preoccupied with my mother's deficits and my own misery. I was finally able to say thank for her love and caring. My mother spent the last few months of her life in hospice care. We got to hold hands, snuggle together, look at old photos and talk about the past with intimacy and closeness that would have been unimaginable several years earlier. Like the Dr. Chicago herself, she had difficulty with her mother. But after that, of course, she did, I think, twice or thrice. And yeah, her relationship improved. And even her sisters, of course, this is not, you know, instant change. But over the years, yeah, people noticed, and her sister later, I think 5-6 years later, said, oh, you have changed, you are different. So you see, if you really do this, there is a result. So the Nikan, not only just your relationship, you also have this insight into the interdependence nature of oneself with others. So you realize that, oh, I am not the self-made person, you know. Normally we have the, oh, I am the self-made person, you know. So you realize that all along that your past years, you have been dependent on many people, not just friends, not just family members, just strangers as well. Even when you go to school, for example, the bus driver, if you took bus to the bus driver, if there were no bus drivers, how would you go to school? And then the toilet cleaner, the sweeper, the garbage cleaner. So when you think of this, all this, you realize that, you know, how dependent you are. And then you start to this notion of independent kind of, disintegrates, and it becomes smaller and smaller. So when you feel that you are so dependent on others, you will be nicer to other person. And then if you're nicer to other person, there is a likelihood that other person will reciprocate. And then your life becomes much happier and easier to live. So that's one.
So we have talked about all this. There are a lot of these anecdotal stories. So let's find out for ourselves. So we are running out of time. If anybody needs to leave at 12, please feel free to leave. If not, I think we have to... we need another 15 minutes. So please pass around the pens and pencils. And then, so the instruction. So it's up to you. You can choose any person. A person who is significant in your life. And honestly try to remember. And recollect, you know, what other person have done for you, and then what you have done for the other person. And then, the most importantly, what troubles. So when you think of troubles, you have to get into the person's perspective, into the person's shoes. You know, when the person cooked for you, so what the person had to do, to go and buy the ingredients, have to do all that. So please, begin. I give you 10 or 15 minutes, if you can spend 15 minutes, that would be, otherwise it won't be that. It won't be adequate. You choose one person, and then yeah, you just go through the questions. So what have I received from? You can just put a short form, whatever it is, the person's name, or you don't have to write it. So that blank is supposed to choose the person. So it is somebody, John, you just put J or something. Kind of actness, the act of kindness, it doesn't have to be a huge one. As simple as, you know, he or she sent me or drove me to whatever place. Even clearing the garbage bin is also an act of kindness.
Thank you.
two more minutes and then yeah. Sorry, I think this needs more time actually. So we normally spend one session is almost 2 hours. We only reflect on 3 years. So of course in the actual retreat you don't get to write. And not really, I wouldn't say. It's actually you just contemplate. So this is part of analytical meditation. So you just go, I mean, try to recollect your life and then your interaction, recollect your interaction. So this is important because without giving attention and recognition of others' kindness, many of these kindness that we received go unnoticed. And because of that, we fail to develop appreciation towards other person. So I don't know whether... okay, let me just put it this way. So how was it? How did it go? So did you see a pattern or anything? Anybody wants to share, feel free to share. Yeah.
I found myself jumping from one to the other. Just the person that I was thinking of was my mother who died many, many years ago. I think not only what she had done for me, but also things that I had done for her and the various ways that I did not do right for her in many ways. But I kept jumping back and forth. It was always a return.
You can do that.
One of the things I found here is that, the blame thing here, blaming her for how I had, have felt, even when I was in a position to know better. There was an incident where it was very negative actions committed, and I hadn't developed at that time, that was like 30 years ago, the kind of patience and compassion for her. I just, just reacted and blamed her for it. So that was one of the main things here.
Yeah. Anybody? Okay, so this, of course, this is just sample, just a taste. So it is more effective if you go back and if you are able to do on daily basis, just half an hour. You spend half an hour and, especially if you have difficulty with a person, then, if you think from the, let's say if your partner or husband, wife, so when you reflect when you try to recollect the person's kindness from the moment you met, then you will see lots of things, kindness the person did, and that will definitely have effect on your, changing your perception of the other person. At the moment, most of the time it is like completely 100% negative, 100% blameworthy. 100% that person's fault. 100%, ungrateful. But then when you reflect on this, then yeah, that will start to kind of dissolve. And yeah, that will help. So if you are interested, these are the books. I think we are already running late. I think,
so
yeah,
the,
we can.
The dedication prayers, the short Magal offering first verse on page 4, and then the concluding prayer.
Drogue namda jela jubara joy. Rana mendala gana yada yame. Rimbo je ma je bana je jo je. Jeba nyamba meba ya kone kondo bewa jo. Koze rabde je namga chile jo jo jeba da. Loza dembe dreme sazum ge Drove meze dado ne yoro je Korve shengan zo bendan dewa malu jungwe ne Chere zewa tenzen jazo ye Jabe sede bado ten yoro je Chedara kemba dan kundu sambo teya deje Dada gwenje jezo talo je Gyawa dada dam rado ngo Shekbe gyawa tam je ge Ngova kala chodo ngaba Daje gewe zawa de gwenja Sambo che je rado ngova ye